Right, give me 1 second. Okay. Right. Good evening. Welcome everyone to the Simple Actions Group of Alcoholics Anonymous. My name is Morgan and I am an alcoholic.
I'm Morgan.
Just a little bit of housekeeping. We will be recording and publishing the audio only portion of this meeting. You can sign up for email on our website at simpleactions.net. For those who care to join us, let's open the meeting with the Serenity Prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Right. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. Newcomers, is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you.
My name's
Welcome, BJ. Anybody else in your first 30 days? All right. And if anybody was too shy, people can put their numbers in the chat. It goes to everybody. There we go. This is the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And tonight we will be discussing step 4, part 1. And if y'all would help me welcome our speakers, we're going to have Brenda and Matt. All right. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to share the readings up here so everybody can see. And I'll read a paragraph. However many it calls for, and then each of our panel will share for a few minutes or however long that they feel comfortable with on each of those readings, then we'll continue on to the next. Everybody see it? Just give me a thumbs up. Awesome. All right. Step 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. And this is on page 63. Next, we launched out on a course of vigorous action, the first step of which is a personal house cleaning, which many of us had never attempted. Though our decision was a vital and crucial step, it could have little permanent effect unless at once followed by a strenuous effort to face and be rid of the things in ourselves which had been blocking us. Our liquor was but a symptom, so we had to get down to causes and conditions. First, we searched out the flaws in our makeup which caused our failure, being convinced that self, manifested in various ways, was what had defeated us. We considered its common manifestation. Resentment is the number one offender. It destroys more alcoholics than anything else. From it stems all forms of spiritual disease, for we have not been only mentally and physically ill, but we have been spiritually sick. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. In dealing with resentments, we set them on paper. We listed people, institutions, or principles with whom we were angry. We asked ourselves why we were angry. In most cases, it found that our self-esteem, our pocketbooks, our ambitions, our personal relationships, including sex, were hurt or threatened. So we were sore. We were burned up. On our grudge list, we set opposite each name our injuries. Was it our self-esteem, our security, our ambitions, our personal or sex relations, which had been interfered with? And that is it for the first reading. So it was a longer one. Did y'all decide who goes first, Brenda or Matt? No, Brenda, you want to take it away? You're just right in front of me. You're right next to my name. So I'm picking on you. Oh, you're muted. Still muted. I'm trying.
There I am.
There you go.
Thank you all very much for having me. My name is Brenda, and I am an alcoholic. We'll get the business out of the way, the formality. My home group is Friends of Bill W. in Suffolk. We meet on Thursdays at noon with an as-built CSIP meeting, and at 7 o'clock on Thursday evenings with a big book study. My sobriety date is October the 21st, 2011. I have a sponsor. She also has a sponsor who also has a sponsor, and I sponsor various women. Resentments. The part that, it says after the third step, next, we launched on a course of vigorous action. And it doesn't say you wait a few days, a few months, a few weeks. We launched on a course of vigorous action as soon as we completed our third step and taking that personal inventory. It was hard for me, and I didn't do what the book suggested. I kept putting it off because everybody told me how hard it was going to be. So, of course, I thought it was going to be really hard, really difficult, because I had never really looked at me. My resentments were because of everybody else. Nobody was doing what I needed them to do. I didn't blame my drinking on anything other than the fact that I was an alcoholic. But all these people had done so many bad things to me. And you know where they give us that list of how we're supposed to make those columns? Well, the first one, my first column had my mom and dad on it. And why? Because of all the stuff that it did to me. And it affected my entire life. So I was angry. I was really angry, which is what resentments are. Looking at my part in it, well, I was a child. How could I have possibly played a role? Being the selfish and self-centered person I am, I blamed all my mistakes as an adult on my parent, which is ridiculous. You know, when you're a grown-up, you're supposed to act like that. I lived in was brought up in a very chaotic household. During my triage, when I finally admitted that I had a problem, they asked me, were you ever sexually, emotionally, or physically abused, all of the above. So coming to terms with that, the part that got me was where it says resentment is the number one offender. I had, I needed and wanted to be a good, sober alcoholic. I needed a spiritual solution. And it told me in the big book that the only way that I could get that was that resentment was going to stand in the way. I had to get rid of those resentments or I would never have a spiritual connection. That got my attention. So I knew I had to forgive. I had to get rid of that resentment. And it took me a while. I had been estranged from my parents for many years. So I gave in and said, okay, please help me here. Please, give me the willingness to forgive. A phone call to my parents. That was me helping me get over the resentment. I wanted that spiritual connection so badly. So I let it go and started calling my parents once a week, which eventually led to calling them a couple of times a week, and to me eventually started at them on occasion. Letting that resentment go was the most difficult thing I ever did. However, it was the most rewarding thing for this alcoholic I ever did. It's hard to let go of resentment. Of course it is. If it was that easy, we'd just pick up the book, read it, say, okay, I'm good to go. But that's not the way it works. I had to put that down on paper, figure out that the best thing for me to get this program, to do what it tells me to do, to face my own shortcomings, which is hard because, it was never my fault, and facing that. So to cut to the chase, I established a relationship with my parents. That was my number one resentment. Was my parents. The rewarding part of all that was when I finally established that relationship. When my father came down with cancer, I was able to be there for him, to be a good daughter. It wasn't my place to take his inventory. I had to take mine. And I did what the book tells me to do: acceptance, forgiveness. I was able to be there for him in his last day on this earth. My mother died 2 years ago. I think for women, it's always harder with your mother. I don't know why. But she was a very mentally unstable person. And once I accepted that, my resentment was against me, because I'm thinking, you were not bright enough to figure out that this woman was sick. So once I forgave myself for not realizing that, I forgave her. And one of the things that happened was that I wrote her a letter because she was very cruel. And I told her, you know, I understand, you know, you think that I'm not trustworthy. I cannot forgive you for, I can't unhear the things you said to me. I can't unread the things you wrote to me, but I forgive you. And I'm sorry for my part. And I called her on August the 14th, and we, you know, we talked, and I told her I loved her. She died on August the 18th. Thank God for this program, because I would have been beating myself up thinking, you were so stubborn. You were so convinced you were right. And when you finally let it go and opened the door, you had, you know, I left things that there was an open relationship. We finally talked. That's what holding on to resentment does to this alcoholic. Stubbornness, I'm right and you're wrong. And someone in the rooms I've heard say, I would much rather be happy than right. So swallowing my pride, getting rid of the resentment is a must for this alcoholic. The resentments still occur. Of course they do. I hold on to a resentment, and I know when it's coming, to the guy who shares the same thing every single week. You know, I can be really judgmental. So that's part of my resentments, is being judgmental, reminding myself, you know, somebody else in the room hasn't heard that. A newcomer has not heard him share that. It's hard because, you know, we're human. I'm human. And I resort to those old behaviors in a heartbeat. You know, I am so grateful that I have gotten sober through the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. At the same time, I have a forgetter that, and I'm constantly forgetting, you know, the things that got me here. None of us are perfect, and I have a hard time remembering that I'm not perfect. And accepting people for who they are, because I can be that judgmental person, which is what we get to in those character defects. But we're not there yet. So anyway, that's what I've got to share. And I'll turn it over to my compadre, Matt, and let him share his experience, strength, and hope. Thank you.
Thanks, Brenda. Hey, everybody. My name is Matt. I'm an alcoholic. I appreciate everybody being here, and David for asking me to speak tonight. It's been a while since I've been over to the Simple Actions group, so it's good to see everybody on here. You know, so I'll jump back a little bit and just... So my sobriety date's December 21st, 2012. I actually started getting sober, and Simple Actions was my first home group back then. And I didn't even know what a home group was, but it was my home group, damn it. So for me, you know, when I came in and I did step one, two, and three, you know, I don't even really think I knew exactly what was going on. I had just thought that I was a pretty decent person, and I just drank too much, right? Like I woke up every day, said I wasn't going to do it, and then I wound up doing it all over again. And I'd been doing that for years and years and years. Had a lot of pain, and you know, had a lot of parties. So that's kind of where I was, pain and parties at that point. And so I started. I went to a rehab. I got out. I asked a man for help because I really didn't know how to live sober. I really didn't know how to go to functions, go to work, go to anything, take a shower without having a drink in my hand. I thought the little holder up in the shower was for beer. I didn't know that you were supposed to put soap there. But yeah, I took a beer with me everywhere I went. So I removed that. And, you know, I thought things were going to instantly be better because I wasn't drinking anymore. Well, that didn't really happen for me. Some things got better, some things got worse. But I agreed to, I actually agreed to do some simple actions on a daily basis, which my sponsor asked me to do, which was don't drink today, say some simple prayers, participate in a home group, take 12 steps of AA, help others, and attend meetings regularly. And I said, oh yeah, I can do that, right? Little did I know that I didn't just sign up to quit drinking and do those things. I was going to learn a lot about myself and the way that I lived. Again, going back, I just felt like I didn't really, when they said resentments, I didn't think I had any, right? Like, I wasn't real sure what that even meant. I just knew, that I was being asked to strip away alcohol and start writing down things on this four step. And then I guess I was probably maybe about 8 months sober. And I had floundered around on the four step for about 3 months. You know, my sponsor just kind of, he didn't really push me to do the steps, but he was kind of asking me on a regular basis, hey, are you doing them? And I told him, I said, I really don't think I have many resentments. I mean, sure, there was stuff that people did to me that were horrible. You know what I mean? And I might have done some horrible things back, I guess. But so he actually had to describe what a resentment might be. And I said, oh, okay. And I sat down and started putting pen to paper. And come to find out, unbeknownst to me, I had resentments going back as far as I could remember. I think there were a couple I was like 8 years old. A kid picked on me in the playground, you know, 12 years old. A kid and I got in a fight. He punched me in the face. Like all of a sudden, it was like I opened this floodgate of resentments. And I didn't know, but I was carrying all that stuff for all those years. I still know those people's names. I can still picture their face. Like that's how many resentments and how strong they were that I was carrying. And then like Brenda was talking about, I mean, I obviously carried a lot that I didn't even realize that I had with my ex-wife, that I had with my family, that I had at work. There was all kinds of stuff that I started peeling back layers to find out that I was carrying all this stuff. And I had a hard time putting it down on paper. I had a hard time realizing how many resentments I had. And then when I first started it and started thinking about, oh, it was the people who did this stuff to me. Like that was easy for me. I can make that first column then, right? The resentments and the stuff that you had done to me, all the horrible things that everybody had done. That was really easy for me to do. I was able to go through those, identify those resentments and just kind of write all that down. You know, how it was bothering me and how it harmed me and all those good things. And I didn't even think I had a resentment. I'll fast forward now because you know, after years of sobriety and, I sponsor guys in the program and, I hang out with a bunch of people. And, one of the first things that we, you know, when I take a sponsee through the steps, we start talking, it's always, amazing to me how about 99% of the time they say the exact same thing that I said, which is, I don't really think that I have any resentments. I don't think I really, you know, I didn't steal or whatever. Like I didn't have any resentments, right? And then, you know, I share one or two stories with them about the things that had happened to me and how I identified my resentments. And then, you know, it's like that light bulb goes off and they realize, oh man, yeah, I've got a ton of those. So for me, you know, talking about resentments and then having the ability to identify those And thankfully, because some of the later steps that y'all will talk about later in the months is, you know, the ability for me to identify those on a daily basis and immediately try to wash my side of the street and make it clean. So I'll stop there. Thanks.
Thank you both so much. That was awesome. All right. Our next reading going to be on page 65. We went back through our lives. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. When we were finished, we considered it carefully. The first thing apparent was that this world and its people were often quite wrong. To conclude that others were wrong was as far as most of us ever got. The usual outcome was that people continued to wrong us and we stayed sore. Sometimes it was remorse and then we were sore at ourselves, but the more we fought and tried to have our own way, the worse matters got. As in war, the victor only seemed to win. Our moments of triumph were short-lived. And then on page 66, that went quick. All right, on page 66, it is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads to only futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the alcoholic whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of alcohol returns, and we drink again. And with us, to drink is to die. Brenda, you're muted again.
There. All right. Yes. The business of resentment is infinitely grave. When we harbor such feelings, we shut ourselves off from sunlight of the spirit. And that's what I referred to earlier. The insanity of alcohol returns and we drink again. With us, to drink is to die. And that part scares the bejesus out of me. I never want to go back to that person I became. The last year of my life was horrendous. I drank the moment my feet hit the floor. And like Matt said, I promised myself on a daily basis, not today. I'm not going to do that again. Before you know it, maybe one, just one little one to quiet the jitters. And, you know, then the insanity returned. And I would come to and think, oh, my God, I've done it again. And that's how the last year of my life went. So I don't want to return to that. And for this alcoholic, I need to maintain my spiritual condition. And holding on to resentments, like I was saying earlier, you know, I can become very judgmental, you know, that the guy who keeps sharing the same thing, the person who drinks a lot of coffee and never puts a buck in the basket, you know, my picker comes into play. I've got to avoid being that person. And, you know, it is very difficult to live in today's world and not carry resentment. Thank God for the program, because it helps me step back when those thoughts start, you know, those little mice start entering the space between my ears. I try to replace it with gratitude because I don't want to drink. It's very easy, particularly during the pandemic. I'm not around other physically around my people. To get very complacent. I started resenting COVID. I started resenting Zoom meetings. It was just so many things that not being around my people. So calling my sponsor, reading a passage out of the big book, starting my day off with, I read the daily reflections. I read Emmett Fox. I read the language of letting go, and I talk to other alcoholics. I have to keep doing that every single day, or I'm going to start getting to be that resentful Brenda. Matt referred to, I too didn't think I had any resentments until my sponsor guided me and brought up the things that she had in her life that she grew up with, resentful about. The resentments that we carry for the people who think they belong in the front of the line. There are all these little things that I let eat away at me. And now I try my best to not let those things overcome me and take me by the throat, because it is plain that a life which includes deep resentments only leads to futility and unhappiness. I want to be happy, joyous, and free. The things that I want, those promises from step 9 to come true and remain true. And if I let the picky-unish, and I can be petty also, if I allow that pettiness to invade my life, I am destined to be unhappy and grumpy. I know people with a lot of years of sobriety. They got nothing I want because they're petty and picky. I don't want to be one of those people. And so I try to not do the things that I know. I try not to let them get the best of me. I don't let them invade my happy world. Toxic people, I understand they exist. I also know that I don't have to let them invade my world. If I don't do what this program teaches me to do, that if I don't have a power greater than me that I believe in, and we each get to choose our own higher power, but I get to rely on a higher power to help me through the resentments that we all encounter on a daily basis. And that's all I've got. Thank you.
Thanks, Brenda. I was sitting here thinking, part of the reading, which was we went back through our lives, nothing but thoroughness and honesty. Nothing counted but thoroughness and honesty. And, one of the things that I had figured out about myself was I really was not an honest person. I really had no idea how to even be honest. At this point in my life, I was convinced that everybody drank the way that I drank. So I had not only lied to everyone around me, I started lying to myself and started buying in on that, right? Everybody takes their kid to the school and with a beer and a cup holder. I mean, that's the way normal people function, right? So I was really run around being completely dishonest. I'd lie at work. I'd lie to you. I'd lie to everybody. I'd manipulate. I'd turn things out who I wanted them to be. I play God in everyone's lives around me. So when I sat down with this step and I started working and writing, one of the things that become very apparent to me was really step 4 was the first time that I'd ever been honest, other than the fact that I knew that I couldn't continue to drink the way that I was drinking because I was going to die. And I knew that. That was my spiritual moment. That was my burning bush, whatever you want to call it. Is I woke up one day and I just realized that it's always going to be like this and I'm going to die from it. And that scared, like Brenda said, it scared me to death. I wanted to try something different. So rigorous honesty. I did the best I could with it when I did my first 4-step, I don't know that I was as honest as I could have been. I don't really know, looking back on it. I know I was honest enough at the time when I did that first 4-step to keep myself moving and stay sober. The honesty part was something that just didn't come natural for me. If you asked me a story or asked me about something, I'd tell you and I'd embellish it and make it nice and big for you. Or I'd tell you what you wanted to hear so that I could get what I wanted. But one of the things that I learned about that was that led me to a lot of resentment. That led me to, a lot of issues that I spent a lot of hours. I love the part where it says we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. Which leads me to why my life is the way that it is today. Because I didn't realize, but when I quit drinking, I spent my first 39 years of my life squandering the hours. Sure, I had good moments here and there, and I had fun, you know, on occasion. And I was a pretty okay dad, I guess, other than, you know, some of the things that I was doing. But on top, you know, outside of that, I pretty much squandered every hour thinking about how you wronged me, or how I was going to get what I wanted out of you, or just along those lines. Like, that was my life. I'd never helped anyone unless it was to help myself. And I hate, it's hard for me to even admit that. But that's the way that I lived. You know, it was just resentment, hate, discontent, selfishness, self-centeredness. I mean, pretty much everything that I put in my fourth column of this step was the time that I spent squandering my life, which is it took what it took to get me where I am at. I don't wish to turn my back on it. I don't wish to shut the door on it. Those are the things that I did when I did them. And today, I think because of those things, I'm able to look at my life now and appreciate what I have and what I'm doing. And that's why I, you know, like, David texted me the other day and said, "Hey, can you talk on Monday night?" Without even I didn't even think. I just said yes. You know, I don't know what I was doing tonight. I didn't know if I was supposed to be somewhere or do something, but AA comes first now, you know? And I think that doing that and really being rigorously honest about who I am as a person. Now, don't get me wrong. I mean, I don't go telling everything that I hear or feel or whatever. That's what a sponsor is for, and the guys that I'm close to in the program. But I will tell you this, I've never lived in my life. I've never lived where my life is an open book to another human being. And I can honestly say, I'm remarried. I got married in December. But for the first time in my life, I can tell you that I don't worry if my wife has my phone, or I'm not worried about who's going to show up at my house, or, you know, or who we're going to see in public, because I can't take that chance. You know, my life is open to her, and it is open to my kids, and it's open to my guys and my group and my sponsor. You know, that's just what I said I would do, because I know if I keep stuff, or have that secret, second secret life, I know that I'm just starting to build resentments, and I'm leading myself back to that first drink. And I know that it may not be tomorrow, it might not be the next week, but if I keep something and I'm being dishonest and seedy and you know, sneaky, then I'm right around the corner from drinking again. Like I said, it may not happen tomorrow or the next day, but if I'm not rigorously honest with at least one person in my life, I'm setting myself up for failure. So thanks.
Thank you both. That was awesome. Right. Our next readings are going to be also on page 66. We turn back to the list, for it held the key to the future. We were prepared to look at it from an entirely different angle. We began to see the world and its see that the world and its people really dominated us. In that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had power to actually kill. How could we escape? We saw that these resentments must be mastered, but how? We could not wish them away any more than alcohol. This was our course. We realized that the people who wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, though we did not like their symptoms and the way that these disturbed us. They, like ourselves, were sick too. We ask God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience that we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, "This is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done." We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance at being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. Brenda.
Okay, again, I'm Brenda, alcoholic. We turn back to the list where it held the key to the future. You're entirely ready to look at it entirely different angle. And I guess that is what helped me in forgiving my parents, my brothers. They were spiritually sick people, as sick as I was. And it was very difficult, but with prayer and the words in this book, in that state, the wrongdoing of others, fancied or real, had the power to kill. And that is what I had to do. This alcoholic is to look at things fancied or real. If I didn't let go of the anger and resentment, it would have killed me, because I know for me, to drink again means death. You know, skip the jail and the institutions, it would have killed me. I know that part of what my wrongdoing as far as living in this world, I became a chameleon and would say yes, become what you needed me to be, and then resent you for thinking I was that person that you wanted me to be. So building up those kinds of resentment, which was entirely my doing. I have been married 3 different times and would always blame the husband for resenting him for thinking I was the person I led him to believe I was. You know, it was always his fault because he believed I was who I led him to believe I was. Does that make sense? Has anybody ever done that? You know, and it was awful. I created my own little hell, but it was all your fault, you know? And coming to that realization, of course, the 3 divorces later is when I finally realized, the program helped me realize that it was me all the time. I thought I was a good wife. You know, I cooked, I cleaned, I held down a full-time job, the whole 9 yards. But I was resentful because I was doing all those things. And, you know, because that's who I wanted you to think I was. A good wife does those things, right? And I became resentful over it. I would make unilateral decisions because if I wanted it in the marriage, of course he did. I didn't have to consult him because I was doing what was best for the marriage, right? So those resentments were all my doing. And coming to that realization, understanding that I was so selfish and self-centered, and holding those resentments, I had to let them go. I had to, first of all, admit my wrong, and because it was wrong, and let it go. Because I know that, that whole being angry about things, being the grouch, being the person holding on to that is eventually going, and like Matt pointed out, being dishonest in any way, is trouble for me. I try to be honest today. I try to be sincere and genuine, because if I'm not, I'm that one arm's length away from a drink, and it will kill me. And I know that. A plane that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility, and that's what happens. You know, I don't want to be unhappy again. That last year of my drinking, I was one of the most miserable people you would ever meet. And I would usually am an upbeat, happy, outgoing person. But that last year was horrible. I cut myself off from the world. And these steps, facing my part and letting go of the resentments that I held on to for so long, accepting the fact that I am not a perfect person. I am an alcoholic, and I've made so many mistakes in my life, but the promises say we will not regret the past, nor wish to shut the door on it, because my story might help somebody else. I got here, like Matt said, I got here when I was supposed to. I made all those mistakes. I drank all that alcohol until it brought me here. And I'm here for a reason, and that is to help another alcoholic who may have made the same mistakes I did and thinks, oh, I can never forgive myself. Guess what? Yes, you can, because the God of my understanding forgave me. And if the God of my understanding can forgive me, then who am I not to forgive myself? That's all I got. Thank you.
That was awesome. Thank you. So I look at this and some things really stand out to me. This is probably a really, really powerful reading right here. I think if you'd have told me that when I first got sober, I'd have said, yeah, you're crazy. But looking back on it now and looking at this reading, you know, we changed the way that we looked at people. We looked at the way that we viewed them, because really, to be honest with you, you all were doing me wrong. Whether it was we were in traffic and you were in front of me and you didn't go when the light turned green, like you did that on purpose to me. I don't know. I think everybody in the world did stuff to me on purpose. Like, I didn't even realize, I think, well, it's been a little while now, but I don't even think I realized that other people had lives. Like, you guys just affected me. I didn't really think of you as a person who had your own problems with your parents or your siblings or at work or, you know, whatever your issues were. All I knew is what you were doing was affecting me. The way that you were behaving, if you weren't in a good mood, you ruined my day. If, you know, just those types of things, I didn't realize that as a human being, I was so codependent upon other people for the way that I felt. And you damn sure were in my way. If you weren't in a good mood, then, you know, you were going to get run over. So now I'm going to look at people, right? And I'm going to treat them as if they were a sick friend. And I just, you know, I had to really put that in perspective. You know, would you go in and yell at somebody who's a cancer patient, who's dying of cancer because they're ruining your day because they're sick? Like, you don't do that, you know, like, so I had to really see the root of the way that I saw people. And I'm not going to tell you, I'm not perfect at this at all. Like, I still have days where I feel like, you know, if my daughter is struggling with stuff and she's in a bad mood, then I feel like it's up to me to figure out what's wrong with her first. And then I feel like I should be the one who has to fix it for her. And when people are sick and they're going through stuff, sometimes they don't want you to do that. I didn't even know that. I didn't know that was a thing. You know, I didn't know how to do that. So it's taken me years of practice. But, you know, the other part of this is, you know, we avoid retaliation and argument. That just blows my mind. How do you not tell somebody immediately how you feel? Like, how do you not yell at someone for them feeling badly, like, you know, and bringing you down or you know, them having a rough time or whatever's going on in their life? You know, one of my favorite things now that I hear is we cease fighting everything and everyone. And that's kind of a mantra that I live by today. Some days I'm not capable of it. I'm not perfect. But I think that the more that I learn in the program and the more time that I spend away from alcohol and with people who are trying to get better on a daily basis, I think I get better at that stuff. My fuse used to be really short, you know. I would fly off the handle at anything. And I got to be honest with you, you know, most days, more days than not now, I'm the one that my family comes to. I'm the one that the people that I work with come to. Which is not my character. Trust me when I tell you, that's not the way that I am. But through patience and learning how to live a different way, I've become the person that is level-headed. Hell, who knew, right? Like, I mean, who knew I'd be that guy? I actually can take a deep breath, think about it and then help another human being through a situation if they want me to do it. I don't have to solve everybody's problems. If they come to me, I can take things head on and help if I can. The other part is that I also know that people are sick as well. One of the things that's helped me a lot is the way that people act outside of the rooms. I feel sorry for most of them because, hell, at least in here, we have each other. You know, I guarantee you that the guy who was pissed off at work today is not on a meeting at 7 o'clock to talk with other people that are like him about the things that are going on in his life. They don't have that ability. I feel fortunate and blessed that I do have that ability. The chance to be spiritually well. That's what this program gives me, is the opportunity to be spiritually well and to treat other human beings well, better than I used to. Not always well, but better. So thanks.
Thank you both. So we have one more reading. What I'll do is I'll read it and maybe y'all could each do like a minute and then we'll wrap it up. That sounds good. And I hate to leave y'all with this one for just 1 minute because there is a lot. I should have lumped it all together. It's all good. All right, last reading on page 67, referring to our list again, putting out of our minds the wrongs others had done. We resolutely looked for our own mistakes. Where had we been selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened? Though a situation had not been entirely our fault, we tried to disregard the other person involved entirely. Where were we to blame? The inventory was ours, not the other man. When we saw our faults, we listed them. We placed them before us in black and white. We admitted our wrongs honestly and were willing to set these matters straight. All you, Brenda.
Okay. The key in this sentence is the inventory was ours, not the other fellow's. And that's the part to remember, which was hard for me because, again, when I came in, everything that happened to me was somebody else's fault. My inventory, not the person that I wanted. And that is, I think, the whole thing about step four is that we're looking at ourselves, period. That's all I got. Thank you.
Right. Hey, so looking at this, you know, referring to our list again, we basically do this fourth column for me. And this basically says to me, this describes everything that we've talked about to this point. And I don't even have to read where we had been. I was selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and frightened. And that drove me to have the resentments that I had. That drove me. And it was basically completely debilitating the way that I lived my life. That was my mantra, those words right there. And when I decide to put everybody else to the side and I look at myself and I accept responsibility for the way that I had been and the way that I still can be, I realize that, it's none of my business the way that other people are. All I can do is clean up my side of the street and try to learn to live a different way. And through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I've been able to live, sober now for a little while, one day at a time. And learn how to accept responsibility for my behaviors. Whether somebody has done me wrong or not, I clean my side of the street up. And most importantly, no matter what, I don't take the first drink today. Because there's no way that I'm going to do all this and spend all the time that I do and go back out there and drink again and have to realize again, once again, what I'm like as a human, because I already know. And I have the tools to not do that. So I want to thank everybody. Thanks for being here. Brenda, thanks for sitting with me. I appreciate it.
Thank you both so much. It was truly a pleasure having y'all tonight. That was great. All right. I'm passing the Seventh Tradition Zoom link. There's a PayPal link if you feel inclined to donate. The Seventh Tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, while contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses. The Seventh Tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their inner group, central office, Local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety, our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? You are able to unmute if you have an announcement. All right, I will take that as a none. Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, raise your hands. All right. Sponsorship question. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, we will be here in the Zoom room after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to any of us. And if you're shy, feel free to send an email to info@simpleactions.net. In closing, thank our panel tonight. Thank y'all so much. That was awesome. And I'll unmute everyone after the Lord's Prayer. We can all hang for a little while. Could I get BJ to read the last two paragraphs on page 164?
Sure.
Awesome. I will throw that up for you. Give me 1 second.
My name is BJ. I'm an you guys just taken our book. Realize God will ask the great fact for us. Abandon your to God and may God bless
you. Thank you, BJ. All right. And we can go ahead and close this meeting with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Thine is the kingdom, power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. Thank you both. Thanks, Brenda. Thanks, Matt. I think everybody should be able to unmute. I think I had the box to be able to unmute.
Thanks, Brenda.
Thanks for speaking, Matt. Brenda.
Thanks so much.
Thank you all for having me, Matt. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brenda. Thank you,
Morgan.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks for chatting, Morgan.
Pleasure.
Thanks.